Welcome to Break the Chains, America's top radio source of information for people struggling with drug or alcohol addiction and those who love them. And now, the host of Break the Chains, Gwen Cardin.
What if I told you that there's something available to people with drug and alcohol addiction that eliminates or significantly reduces cravings? What if that same thing could also eliminate the high that addicts feel? What if I told you that I'm not referring to a medication, but instead to a revolutionary technology available around the United States and often with permanent results? Well, what I'm talking about is neurofeedback. It's also known as EEG biofeedback or biofeedback for the brain. When an addict abuses substances, fundamental changes occur in the architecture of the brain. It simply doesn't look or behave like it once did. This damage produces cravings, anxiety, sleep problems, judgment lapses, inappropriate emotions, depression, loss of motivation, and a whole bunch of other things that aren't too fun to live with. And it happens that feeling normal pleasure is just nearly impossible for the addicts. However, studies show that when neurofeedback is added to conventional treatment modalities like therapy, AA and NA, that addicts get better and they get better faster. They have fewer cravings and they see improvements in all aspects of their lives. And all of this is without medication. So what is this thing called neurofeedback? And why haven't you heard about it? After all, it's been around for about 60 years. So today's guests are going to answer those questions and others over the course of the coming hour. Our first guest today is Ray McGarty, who has worked in the behavioral health field since 1976, and he's the former clinical administrator of the Betty Ford Center. He's currently in private practice in Dover, New Hampshire, and has a large patient population of addicts who receive neurofeedback along with conventional therapy. We have another guest, Bill Scott, who, if we hear from him shortly, I will tell you a little bit more about him, but we'll wait on that. And later on the show, we're also going to speak to someone who was finally able to get sober and stay that way with the help of neurofeedback after many, many unsuccessful and frustrating tries. Oh, we have Bill on the line. Hi, Bill.
Morning, Gwen.
Hi. Bill Scott is CEO of Brain Paint, and Brain Paint is a neurofeedback program that's been shown to be particularly effective in helping addicts remain abstinent long after they've left treatment. And Brain Paint has been featured on the History Channel, The Doctors, and Discovery Science. Recovering addict himself, Bill's program is being actively researched at several universities, including Harvard and UCLA, and within the U.S. military. So, I'm glad to have both of you here, and I'm going to ask you both to kind of chime in as you see fit. But, Ray, let's start with you. How does drug and alcohol abuse damage the brain?
Well, to keep it as simple as possible, the system, the limbic system or mesolimbic system, which is a system that really mediates drives, like fight, flight, and hunger, and so on, seems to be hijacked by addictive processes. It becomes highly sensitive to substances and produces all of the kinds of things that you talked about, cravings, urges, loss of control, and leads people to have tremendous difficulty controlling their emotions or regulating emotional states. Along with that, we see a lot of difficulty with the frontal lobes that really are frontal and prefrontal lobes, which are control the or mediate the executive functions of the brain, our ability to think, attention, focus, and also our ability to not act on urges. Those two central areas of the brain, one seems underactive, that's the frontal areas, and the other is overactive. Some substances make that worse. There seems to be certainly a hereditary predisposition. In other words, some of these brains were not really as functional as need be from birth. Those differences seem to be consistent across children of alcoholics and so on.
Mm-hmm. So when you're talking about the two centers that are most frequently damaged. One controls or relates to how a person thinks and perceives, and the other is more how they feel about things. So what exactly, how does this exhibit itself in things like poor judgment, but maybe, you know, having, being too emotional? I mean, what are those two areas look like when someone, when one's under aroused and the other is over aroused?
The person seems to have trouble controlling their behavior. They're driven by urges, cravings, preoccupations, which lead to self-destructive behavior. There seems to be no stop. As I talk to my clients, I use an analogy of an automobile. And they're an automobile that has a gas pedal that could drive in the Daytona 500, but they have a braking system that would suit a Model T.
I like that analogy. That's a good one. Bill, did you have something to say?
I would agree in my observations, in particularly looking at pre and post neural feedback testing. You know, I concur that in the test, psychological test called the MMPI, that showed precisely what the doctor is referring to with regard to the kind of multitude of problems of anxiety, relationship issues, depression, obsessionality, over concern with what others are thinking about them, hypersensitivity, in addition to cognitive deficits as well, with the majority of the subjects with who underwent some continuous performance testing also prior to the neural feedback had some significant issues that we were able to correct in the experimental group with neural feedback, and but not in the control group who didn't do neural feedback in a study with 121 subjects.
Well, that leads me to a question, because when I talk to people about neurofeedback and I tell them a bit about what's happened to their brain, they get really scared and worried that this damage is permanent. So is it permanent? Is it reversible? Or can it just simply be palliated in some way?
Yeah, it definitely... Go ahead.
No, go.
Yeah, it definitely appears quite reversible in the 2005 UCLA study. The experimental group did seem to normalize a lot of the behaviors pre and post training, and the cognition as well. Their ability to think also improved pretty significantly. But even without neural feedback, those who comply with an ongoing program of recovery after a few years tend to improve a lot of emotional regulation, and also even some cognitive deficits appear to improve as well, just from time away from the substances, but combined with an active recovery program, it seems that a lot of things do improve. They don't seem to improve quite as well as they do when people have done neural feedback, though.
Mm-hmm. So it's not hopeless. The brain does get better, but if they return to using, that's going to reset it and get it back where it was before it got better. And with the neurofeedback, it is going to make it improve more quickly. And perhaps if you do have a relapse, does it have an impact on the severity of the relapse if you've done neurofeedback?
That's been my experience. People tend to have shorter periods of relapse. They tend to actually, in an interesting way, deteriorate a little more quickly and get back to health. But I wanted to just say one other thing in response to the previous question, and that is that this sensitization of the brain systems that drive the urges and cravings does seem to – so it's sensitized to drugs of all kinds that we use to get high. It's also sensitized to stress, and levels of stress can increase urges, cravings, and we know that if you raise stress levels, there have been many studies in, for instance, laboratory animals that they've addicted and then found what would provoke relapse the quickest. Raising levels of stress provokes relapse the quickest. And the other very powerful thing about neural feedback is how it begins to really recondition the autonomic nervous system, which is about the sympathetic, parasympathetic, sympathetic is the fight flight system, parasympathetic is the healing or calming system of the brain. And it really increases the parasympathetic, the brain's ability to calm itself and, of course, calm the body.
And so when that is not working well, then that leads people to use, try to feel better.
It leads them to use. It leads them to get involved in all kinds of other compulsive behaviors. And that's what we commonly see. They'll put down the drink or the drug. But then they'll pick up other kinds of compulsions, whether it's sexual compulsions, gambling, food problems. They are in a state of having these unbearable kinds of internal states that they seem to not be able to regulate. And neurofeedback is for me, has been the single most powerful tool to quickly start to regulate some of that.
So it kind of breaks that cycle. Well, we give up this addiction. Now we've got that one. Now we give that one up. We have another one. So it kind of puts the brakes on that cycle. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
To a great extent, yes.
Mm-hmm. We have a couple of minutes before we're going to go to break. But Bill, could you just give us a real basic explanation of what neurofeedback is? Exactly. What are people, what's happening when people are getting it?
Yeah, good question. Ultimately, neurofeedback teaches our brain, teaches us how to feel better and how to think better is the easiest way to think of it. But there are brain waves, like we have heart waves. When you put a sensor on your heart, you can see how your heart's working. Or we have brain waves as well. When we put similar sensors on our scalp, we can see how our brain is working. And when you can show us how our brain is working with brain waves that are related to how we're thinking and how we're feeling, our brain can self-regulate. It can learn to exercise the underlying brain states that are related to those brain waves. And the problems that are associated with them can reduce significantly.
Mm-hmm. So it uses a computer program, and sensors go on the person's head, and that's how the brain waves are looked at. But people are always saying, oh my gosh, there's something going into my brain. And you want to make sure people understand that it's like a stethoscope where you're reading the brain waves, but you're not putting anything into the brain.
Yes, not directly through the sensors, but the brain, when it can see, when let's say, for example, there's a brain wave that some people have what I call daymares, where during idle moments, their brain goes into these kind of negative states where they start ruminating on things and worrying about things needlessly and things like that. Well, there's a sleep-like brainwave that gets too large while they're awake. And when that starts happening, their brain just goes into these negative thoughts. And they'll usually have nightmares at night as well. People who have a lot of nightmares at night virtually always have what I call daymares during the day. And for that, when they're looking at a screen, there's an indicator that says what is and what isn't. And there's auditory sounds that are happening more rapidly when their brain is more awake. And when it starts getting a little more sleepy, sounds get higher in pitch and they begin to stop. And this graph that says what isn't starts ratcheting up. And then they can learn to control that sleep-like brainwave. And then the underlying brainwaves that are related to it, with their brains sort of waking up more, end up regulating, and they start waking up more. Like during the sessions, though, in that type of training, it's a lot of work for their brains initially. They might get really sleepy during, because it's like a brain workout. But after the sessions, the first thing that starts to improve usually is their sleep-wake cycles. If they have nightmares, usually in a handful of sessions, the nightmares go away. And then we'll usually then see afterward these, what I call daymares, improving as well.
Okay. Listen, it's time to take a short break, but stay tuned, and we'll be right back with more interesting conversation about neurofeedback with our guests Ray McGarty and Bill Scott.
Do you have a question or a comment? Our phone lines are open at 888-GO-FOR-IT. That's 888-463-6748. You're listening to Break the Chains on TalkZone.com.
Is there someone you love who is suffering from alcohol or drug addiction? Do you feel like you simply don't know where to turn? We at Addiction Recovery Helpline know how painful it can be for both your loved one and for you and your family. We also realize that it's never easy to send someone you care about into rehab, but it's easier when you partner with us. Let Addiction Recovery Helpline assist your adult loved one to break the chains of addiction by finding just the right treatment center to meet their needs. Call us today toll-free at 1-844-2-BE-SOBER. That's 844-2-BE-SOBER. Or contact us on the web at getsobernow.net. It's too important to wait even one more day to make that call. Call 1-844-2-BE-SOBER or on the web at getsobernow.net. Most insurance plans accepted.
If you're an adult suffering from drug or alcohol addiction, why not make today the day that you break the chains? At New Life Addiction Treatment Center in Port St. Lucie, Florida, we know it's not easy to pick up the phone and make that call. But remember, the caring staff at New Life is here to help. Count on us to partner with you to guide you towards getting your life back. Our confidential residential program takes most insurance plans and is designed to help meet your unique needs. Write this number down and give New Life Addiction Treatment Center a call right now. The toll-free number is 1-844-2-BE-SOBER. That's 844-2-BE-SOBER. Or contact us on the web at getsobernow.net. Your life is waiting for you, and so are we. Call 1-844-2-BE-SOBER or getsobernow.net.
And now, back to Gwen Cardin on Break the Chains.
Well, I welcome everybody back today, and we are talking today about neurofeedback. Our guests are Ray McGarty and Bill Scott. And before the break, we were talking a little bit about what neurofeedback is and a little bit about how it works. So, Bill, would you like to continue that just a little bit, you were saying before the break?
Yeah. And so what a session would look like is the clients come in, they'll be asked some questions about the previous session and what's happened since the session. What's most valuable is sort of the day following the session. But a lot of people, like the day of a session, might feel kind of tired for a bit during the day. And we actually ask clients to not take naps on the days that they've done their neurofeedback. And when they come in for the session after we've asked those questions, we'll they'd sit down in a chair. We'd place anywhere from 3 to 5 sensors on their head in a particular location, 2 ear clips, 1 on their scalp, and we'd make sure we had a good enough connection with the equipment. It'll tell us when that's the case, and we'd start what's called a protocol. That's usually there's 2 or 3 different protocols will happen in a session. That's just where we put the sensors and what brain waves we'll be training and for how many minutes is all a protocol is. And so once they're looking at the screen, the computer will be making sounds. When brain waves are moving more in the right direction, there'll be sort of more sounds happening. Almost all neurofeedback systems have an auditory component because all the research has been had auditory feedback in it as well. And then there's also visual feedback in that they would be seeing some indicator of when they're getting into the right states or maybe into some of the wrong states. And with our particular equipment, brain pain, they would be indicators as well when the person is physically tensing up more. It would say, like, your tension's increasing. And when they relax a little bit more, it'll say your tension is decreasing. And if they're moving around, if they're talking during a session, it'll give you these break periods that would say, oh, it looks like you were talking too much in that session. We'll need to not do that in the next. And during
Let me just interrupt you here because I what we're trying to do, at least the way I understand it, is that if, let's say, a person has a lot of anxiety, we're trying to train the brain to be a little more calm. If the person has a lot of depression, you know, depression and anxiety are two factors that can cause people to abuse drugs. So if they're depressed, then you maybe want to help the brain to operate on a little bit higher frequency when appropriate. Is that kind of the end goal here, is just to get the brain to be firing at the proper rate at the proper time, as opposed to being anxious when you should be calm or being depressed when you should be alert?
Absolutely. Yep, absolutely.
Ray, did you want to say something?
I think that's a good summation. A lot of these issues are about arousal regulation, whether a person is experiencing dramatic under arousal or over arousal. A lot of the brains that we're dealing with rapidly shift states and put people in these unbearable kinds of places emotionally, like in deep depression or intense anxiety or hyperarousal, or spin them into migraine, or the brain is upregulating when they're going to bed at night when it really should be downregulating. And the bottom line is that we're helping the brain optimize its function so that whatever its task is in front of it, whether that's to slow down or speed up, it does it in an effective way. And if you give the brain significant feedback about its own functioning, as Bill said, in terms of sound, for instance, and some visuals, the brain responds. The brain wants to be in an optimal state. The organism wants to be in an optimal state. So it's a conditioning paradigm. You give it, the sounds begin to teach the brain and body what it's like to be, for instance, in a more relaxed state or in a state of more focused attention, depending on, you know, what specific issues you're working on, as Bill said, what the protocol is and what brain areas you're trying to impact.
Mm-hmm. So you're really teaching the brain through the feedback to shift into the appropriate gear at the appropriate time. Is that an oversimplification?
No, not at all. Not at all. It's a wonderful simplification.
That's precisely all we're doing, really. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Bill, just very briefly, could you give us the history of neurofeedback? Because as I said at the top of the show, it's been around for 60 years, but interestingly, most people have not heard of it. So just very briefly, the history of it, and then let us know why it's not as well known as it should be.
Yeah, good question. In the mid-60s, a man by the name of Joe Kamiya, in their laboratory, they were teaching rabbits to warm up one ear, turning it red through heat biofeedback. And one of his graduate students said, why don't we try seeing if we can teach people to control their brainwaves? They were learning how to control their heartbeat and other biologic systems. And so Joe had looked up meditators and research in their EEG and found that some advanced meditators would produce this very high alpha. So he thought, well, what if we taught people to increase this alpha brainwave? And his very first subject, he found, he put the sensors on his head, and over the course of the first session, this particular meditator was a person who didn't know how to meditate, could actually increase his alpha across a session, and then across multiple sessions, his alpha kept getting higher and higher, and he thought, wow, this is wonderful. And he said that since then, in all the years of his research, he'd never found anyone who could control their alpha like that again. But being that he found this one subject who could raise their alpha that much, you know, he started to investigate the phenomenon. So he was really thought of as sort of the father of the field of neural feedback. But someone who really took it to the next level, I would say, would be Barry Sterman. In 1969, did a study with cats initially, where they were looking at some of Joe Kamiya's earlier work, and they thought, what would happen if we trained cats to increase this brainwave that's involved with muscle control, and to see what might happen with them. It's a brainwave that when they're sitting in a state getting ready to jump on a mouse, their tail is twitching and they're being very still, produce large amounts of that. So he said, let's see what if we can teach them to do it. Sure enough, they were able to increase that brainwave. And then NASA needed a bunch of cats for some experiments to find out why astronauts were having these hallucinations. They thought maybe the gas was causing some seizure-like activity. And so they got this batch of cats from UCLA, and when they exposed them to the gas, the cats that had done the neural feedback were immune to the toxic effects of the gas. It stopped their seizure activity. And when Barry got word about that, he thought, wow, that's remarkable. There must be some kind of self-regulation that happened in these cats. So he replicated that research where he trained their brains with this sensory motor rhythm training, he calls it, and he exposed them to this gas and found that they were also immune. From there, he did it with people who had seizure problems, and then they reduced their seizures by 67%, and that was where the field really began. And from there, there have been other replications of seizure studies, but most of the work then people have looked at, well, brainwaves with people who have attentional problems also have too many of these sleep-like brainwaves when they're trying to be awake, and so others since have been training people with attentional problems with EEG biofeedback, and as of last year, the American Academy of Pediatrics finally ranked neurofeedback as being a best practice for ADHD, equal with medications.
Mm-hmm. So what they've said is that this can be as effective as medications, and what we know about neurofeedback is that opposed to medication, when you stop taking it, the effects go away. However, when you've trained with neurofeedback and you've trained your brain waves to operate and more optimally, that doesn't tend to go away. Is that correct? Is that what we find?
Exactly, yeah. The long-term studies, like some are as much as 10 years, like Eugene Peniston, his first addiction study, he did follow-up for 10 years with them and found the same success rate had happened. Joel Lubar did a 10-year follow-up with people with ADHD, found that they didn't. In the UCLA study, we were able to contact everyone in the entire study, the 121 subjects, everyone except for three subjects, and collateral contact, others who would verify that the people were still abstinent. That was an accumulation of a year and a half after treatment. The effects are permanent. There's also some fMRI studies with ADHD also that showed the problem went away in the experimental group who were on medication and doing neural feedback. And then when they were retested, 6 months and a year after the neurofeedback training, that those who did the neurofeedback, that their brain, part of their brain that was too sleepy-like, actually, had actually remained woken up, where those who were on the medication, their brains quickly reverted back to the states who didn't do the training. Their brains stayed asleep off of the drug. So, yeah, because it's just an exercise. It's just like when you learn to balance on a bike, your brain develops some new neural networks for that, and that's permanent. That's what we're teaching the brain with neural feedback, to balance brain state that are related to how we're thinking and how well we're feeling. And so when it develops new abilities, it never loses them, whether it's brain states for how we feel and think or riding a bike or playing a piano.
So the application to addicts is that once they've done the neurofeedback training and their brain is more balanced, once they, let's say if they're doing that in a rehab environment, but or even on an outpatient basis, once they're not doing it anymore, there have been significant changes to the point that they are likely not to continue to have the underlying things such as anxiety or depression that they had, which got them into the problem in the first place. That's a really convoluted question, but I guess what I'm trying to say is as opposed to medication, when you get off the medication, the effects are gone. When you've done neurofeedback, the new neural pathways have grown, the links and connections are stronger, and chances are they're not going to return to the state that they were in.
And I might say that all medications of the kind we're talking about have significant side effects and long-term effects. You don't get that with norfeedback.
Well, that is a good thing, and I think I want to ask about that. So you hang on to that thought, Ray. I want to talk about side effects versus not, but we're going to have to take another break right now. And when we come back, we will continue our discussion about neurofeedback. So don't go away.
Is there someone you love who is suffering from alcohol or drug addiction? Do you feel like you simply don't know where to turn? We at Addiction Recovery Helpline know how painful it can be for both your loved one and for you and your family. We also realize that it's never easy to send someone you care about into rehab, but it's easier when you partner with us. Let Addiction Recovery Helpline assist your adult loved one to break the chains of addiction by finding just the right treatment center to meet their needs. Call us today toll-free at 1-844-2-BE-SOBER. That's 844-2-BE-SOBER. Or contact us on the web at getsobernow.net. It's too important to wait even one more day to make that call. Call 1-844-2-BE-SOBER or on the web at getsobernow.net. Most insurance plans accepted.
If you're an adult suffering from drug or alcohol addiction, why not make today the day that you break the chains? At New Life Addiction Treatment Center in Port St. Lucie, Florida, we know it's not easy to pick up the phone and make that call. But remember, the caring staff at New Life is here to help. Count on us to partner with you to guide you towards getting your life back. Our confidential residential program takes most insurance plans and is designed to help meet your unique needs. Write this number down and give New Life Addiction Treatment Center a call right now. The toll-free number is 1-844-2-BE-SOBER. That's 844-2-BE-SOBER. Or contact us on the web at getsobernow.net. Your life is waiting for you, and so are we. Call 1-844-2-BE-SOBER or getsobernow.net.
Welcome back to Break the Chains. Here again, your host, Gwen Cardin.
Before we resume our discussion about neurofeedback, I'd like to remind you that we are on Facebook at www.facebook.com/breakthechains1. We invite you to visit and like our page and come back often. We are talking today to Ray McGarty and Bill Scott. And before the break, Ray, we were talking about side effects of medication versus neurofeedback. So are there side effects to neurofeedback, and how do they compare to any side effects for conventional medications?
Well, side effects to neurofeedback, for the most part, seem to be limited to a session. So a person might go away and they might be a little too activated or a little underactivated.
What does that mean? What does that mean?
they go away very kind of sleepy, or they go away feeling a little bit of anxiety. They might have trouble sleeping that evening. That usually wears off within the first 24 hours, and it's a good indicator for us then to make adjustments in the kind of protocols that we're using. So the side effects are minimal, and they're far from long-lasting. Whereas we all know that most of the psychiatric medications have some pretty powerful side effects, not to mention that many of them are addicting in and of themselves. So they're not good choices for our clients. The underlying kinds of issue that is most important for us to help people with is this whole issue of emotion regulation. If you look at the DSM, which is the Bible of behavioral disorders, over half the diagnostic categories are categories that have to do with the person's inability to regulate their emotional states. When somebody puts down a drug, like alcohol, cocaine, or whatever, they are dramatically impaired in that ability, and they further impaired themselves by using the substances. So all of this stuff begins to arise, whether it's anxiety, depression, rapid shifts in mood. And the power I find with the neurofeedback, particularly some specific types of neurofeedback, is that you can quickly start to regulate their emotional states, which emotions are what drive us. And they're driven by some pretty unbearable states. So you can go directly at that with very little side effect.
Mm-hmm. So, well, is neurofeedback helpful for everybody? Or are there like some medications like an antidepressant, one kind of antidepressant works better on this person than another kind? Is neurofeedback that way? Or is everybody, can everybody be responsive to it?
I've only been doing neurofeedback for about the past 4 years, and I found a tiny subset of people that seem to not have a response. I'm talking about less than 1%. Most people seem to be able to respond. There are different types of neurofeedback, and when one approach isn't working, you have a number of options. The brain, we're being told now that the brain is plastic, meaning it changes, and it changes with experience. This is a learning experience. As long as the person is conscious and neurons are talking to one another, they can be impacted by this type of training.
Mm-hmm. So really anything that we do in life is changing our brains.
Right.
So there's nothing magical about it. It's just that we are changing our brain in a more... in a way that's more directed, I should say, with a goal in mind, as opposed to just, you know, sitting. I mean, I think if you sit and you watch a great movie, you form a memory in your brain, and so your brain is changed from watching that movie. And in this case, we're changing the brain, but with the end result of looking toward where the brain is not responding and functioning in an optimal way.
Exactly right. We're moving them toward optimal functioning. And there's a whole branch of neurofeedback that deals with peak performance with athletes and so on. It has good effect and has been studied. So you again can increase the brain's capacity to perform in an optimal fashion.
Mm-hmm. And there's something really interesting in neurofeedback called the Penniston effect. Bill, could you tell us a little bit about that?
Right. I think you're referring to it, what's known as the Penniston flu.
Penniston flu?
Yeah, where people have, when they've done neurofeedback, when they have an addiction and they start to use it again. Ray touched on this a little bit also already, how he finds that when people relapse, how he finds that, similar to the research I've been involved with Penniston and the UCLA study as well, that within 4 weeks, they're going to stop using again. A significant number of the people who do attempt to use will find that they don't get the relief they used to get from the substances prior to the neural feedback. A lot of people will go right into almost the withdrawal phase, that they're, you know, abusing sedatives or opiates and things of that nature, where ordinarily they would get high for a longer period of time and kind of enjoy it after they have not used for a period of time. They don't get anywhere near the relief they used to when they've done neurofeedback. About 25% of them, actually, with the polysubstance abusers, those who use lots of other drugs, that is. And it's about 50% of the population of alcoholics, when they would attempt to use, about half of them would get sick right away. But also,
so it ruins the high. Does it do kind of like what antabuse does?
They don't seem to get that sick that antabuse does. It's just they just don't feel so good. Rather than kind of getting sort of easygoing from alcohol, for example, they'll just get kind of sad and depressed from it and really sleepy rather than getting kind of elated and euphoric.
I don't think it's directly comparable to antabuse, which, you know, makes you very sick.
Yeah.
I think what happens is that, again, the brain is functioning at a better level. So you put a toxin in the brain and it's going to have a more, powerful response, a negative response. It doesn't want the toxin. We see the same thing with people who come in. I see the same thing and others do on medication. They may be on antidepressant medication like an SSRI. They start training with neurofeedback, and they weren't having side effects on their medication. All of a sudden, now they're starting to have mild side effects, and the medication needs to be decreased because the brain is now functioning at a better level. It doesn't need what we're putting into it artificially, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I see. I see where I work that people who come in and are not sleeping well, and they put them on something to help them sleep, and after a few neurofeedback sessions, they're falling asleep before they even take their sleep medication at night. So it does definitely help with sleep for sure.
Yeah.
Do people have to be careful if they're on other medications? Will neurofeedback, is there any danger to doing neurofeedback when someone is on, say, an antidepressant or an anti-anxiety medication?
The only danger is that they might not need the medication much over time. And I say that,
tongue in cheek.
Which is a good thing. No, they're not going to have an adverse effect. But they may, where before they might not have been experiencing any side effects on the dose that they're on, they might start to feel some mild side effects and will have to cut the dose down. And that's the more common thing that I see. I don't know what Bill sees.
Yeah, exactly. No, I see a very similar thing that, it can be like classic symptoms of over-medication is pretty much all that I'll see. And when somebody's taking too much of an antidepressant, for example, they'll tend to lose their sex drive or they won't get as excited about things as they were. One thing about neurofeedback is that a good protocol for someone doesn't become bad. But when they're on a medication and they start getting this kind of flat affect after like 8 to 12 sessions, and not experiencing as much joy, you do what you do with everyone else. You refer them to the prescribing physician. Say, well, the client appears to be, over-medicated. What are your thoughts? And then always with the doctor's suggestion, they can then adjust the medications. My experience, over half of the clients that I work with who are on medications usually get off of them. And I've not seen any negative side effects either from any particular drugs. There's no kind of contraindications, I would say, with any of the prescribed psychiatric medications and neurofeedback.
So the one side effect is that you may not need your medications anymore.
a subset of people right now with this whole narcotic epidemic that's going on, I have some clients who have been maintained on Suboxone and are now having some side effects and want to come off it. And I'm working with them with the neurofeedback to bring them off to Suboxone, and we're having very good success.
There's
that piece too.
We've only got about 2 minutes till break. I was wondering if one of you could talk to listeners about why, if this is so wonderful, it's not everywhere. People often haven't heard of it.
I'd say the biggest reason is I used to be a little more paranoid, I think, about it and think, well, it's the, big pharma and things like that. But what it really seems to boil down to is paradigm paralysis, meaning that people didn't want to do what they are used to doing. And so for hundreds of years, there's three routes of change. You can cut something out with a surgical procedure. You can put something in with a pill. And now in the last year, you can talk about it. And this is a new thing that, where talk therapy says talk about it and you'll feel better. It's a very different paradigm with this. It's teach you how to feel better so then you can talk about it. And so it's a very different paradigm that people are getting used to. So there's more research with this than most other forms of therapy and medications and things like that. But it doesn't fit in with the three kind of archetypes. And things tend to take about 40 to 60 years to really take hold, if they stay around long enough, that is, to be more accepted. But in the addiction space, it is really starting to take off. A lot of people are beginning to look toward evidence-based treatments, and they're finding neurofeedback is really standing out above a lot of the others. So in the addiction space, it is really beginning to take hold. But it's also, it's not a panacea for addiction, in my experience. When it's not combined with an already effective treatment approach for addictions, it doesn't do very much.
So you can't just do neurofeedback and not do anything else, is what you're saying.
Right, right, yeah. With addiction, there are certain things like PTSD and ADHD where it does seem to have a big effect regardless of whatever else they do. But when it comes to addiction of any kind, that is, when it's combined with an already effective treatment approach, then it significantly reduces that resistance to that treatment. So you get the compliance that's necessary for the long-term recovery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree very much with that. You know, from the addiction perspective, people need a recovery program of some sort and recovery supports. But let me also say, I'm primarily a psychotherapist, and what I find is that this often prepares people to actually do some psychotherapeutic work that they wouldn't typically be capable of doing. They come to me now for the neurofeedback. They don't want therapy, and then about 2 months into the neurofeedback, they say, you know, I've got this stuff coming up, and I really want to start to work on it now. And they seem to have the regulatory capacity, the ability to deal with the emotion. So it really enhances the psychotherapeutic work.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Well, listen, it's time again when we have to take another break from the show, but stay tuned and we'll be right back.
If you'd like to participate on Break the Chains, call 888-GO-FOR-IT. That's 888-463-6748. We will return with more right after this.
If you're an adult suffering from drug or alcohol addiction, why not make today the day that you break the chains? At New Life Addiction Treatment Center in Port St. Lucie, Florida, we know it's not easy to pick up the phone and make that call. But remember, the caring staff at New Life is here to help. Count on us to partner with you to guide you towards getting your life back. Our confidential residential program takes most insurance plans and is designed to help meet your unique needs. Write this number down and give New Life Addiction Treatment Center a call right now. The toll-free number is 1-844-2-BE-SOBER. That's 844-2-BE-SOBER. Or contact us on the web at getsobernow.net. Your life is waiting for you, and so are we. Call 1-844-2-BE-SOBER or getsobernow.net.
Is there someone you love who is suffering from alcohol or drug addiction? Do you feel like you simply don't know where to turn? We at Addiction Recovery Helpline know how painful it can be for both your loved one and for you and your family. We also realize that it's never easy to send someone you care about into rehab, but it's easier when you partner with us. Let Addiction Recovery Helpline assist your adult loved one to break the chains of addiction by finding just the right treatment center to meet their needs. Call us today toll-free at 1-844-2-BE-SOBER. That's 844-2-BE-SOBER. Or contact us on the web at getsobernow.net. It's too important to wait even one more day to make that call. Call 1-844-2-BE-SOBER or on the web at getsobernow.net. Most insurance plans accepted.
You're listening to Break the Chains, America's top radio source of information for people struggling with drug or alcohol addiction. Here's your host, Gwen Cardin.
Before we resume, I want to invite you to email me with any comments or questions. My email address is addictionradioshow@gmail.com, and you can also find my contact information on the show page. And I'd now like to bring someone on the show who has actually benefited from neurofeedback with his addiction. I have Michael on the line, and he's a 46-year-old retired firefighter from the Northeast. He's been sober since October, which is the longest period of sobriety that he has had in 6 years. He says that he owes being sober in large part to finally discovering and undergoing neurofeedback sessions. Michael's quitting odyssey began about 6 years ago when he came home too drunk one night to even untie his shoes. So his wife insisted that he do something. And he did. He got a sponsor, and he started regularly attending AA meetings, but he only had brief periods of sobriety, like a week or a month or maybe a couple of months. Ironically, he was functioning so well at work that nobody even knew that he was an alcoholic. But, you know, at home it was a far different story. and he describes himself as being really checked out from the family. He was there, but he wasn't present for his wife, for his three kids, and his wife had to carry all the domestic duties on her shoulders. And every birthday and holiday ended really badly, with Michael passed out drunk and everybody kind of just trying to pick up the pieces. And Michael's wife told him twice to leave, and twice he did. And both times he swore that he would quit, and both times he didn't, at least not for long. At the core of Michael's challenge was that he had PTSD that was stemming from unresolved childhood sexual abuse, and he also had seen a lot of grisly stuff at work in his life as a firefighter. And he was unable to go to sleep easily. He couldn't stay asleep. He had horrifying nightmares. And when he drank, he would pass out, and those would kind of keep the nightmares at bay. But of course, that was no way to live. And last August, while Michael was banished to his mother's house, he got drunk and he was driving to his sponsor's home, and he hit a parked car and didn't even know it. Not until about 3 hours later, when a police officer that he worked with on his job came to the door and handcuffed and arrested him and carted him off to jail. And he was really humiliated and embarrassed. And so Michael entered a 28-day residential program. And when he came out, he started doing neurofeedback once a week, along with doing counseling and attending AA. So welcome to the show, Michael. I'm glad you're here with us.
Good morning.
Hi. I wanted to ask you, how quickly, once you started doing neurofeedback, did you notice benefits from it?
I would say within the first few weeks, I noticed a difference. You know, I basically woke up one morning and realized I actually slept the night and I didn't have a nightmare.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What was that like for you to have slept a night and not have had a nightmare?
Well, I'm 46 today, and I don't believe my whole adult life I actually slept a night all the way through. And I was, before this radio show this morning, I was thinking about it. And, I, you know, like last night, I slept all night like a baby.
Mm-hmm. And what is the benefit when you're struggling to stay sober? What is the benefit of simply having a good night's sleep and not having nightmares?
Well, I was at the point where I would wake up every, my nightmares were so bad that I would wake up and I'd actually be like scared in the morning. I was like afraid to go to sleep at night because I didn't want to wake up terrified every day.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And when you had a good night's rest, how has that, and that's been consistent since you started doing neurofeedback, that you, the nightmares have gone and you're getting a good sleep most nights, is that
yeah.
correct?
Yes, every night.
Mm-hmm. And by being well rested and the nightmares are being gone, I mean, how does that impact your desire to use, or, you know, any types of skills, or, you know, things that you've learned about that you need to apply to help stay sober?
Well, I, for one, I'm actually a productive, I can do stuff where I spend a good majority of my time just kind of in a fog for years. I just couldn't, you know, go from A to B without, you know, I would get distracted easily, and I couldn't remember things. You know, if I was, say I had tasks to do at home, I knew what the tasks were, but I'd start to walk to do a task, and before I got to it, I couldn't remember what I was supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I think it's due to, you know, mental and physical exhaustion, I would imagine.
Well, and you also made a lot of attempts to be sober before neurofeedback came into your life, but you always backslid because something was not working for you then that's working for you now. What do you think that is that's helping you, that's giving you that edge so that you've been sober since October, and before, if you had quit in October, you would have been drinking again by Christmas?
Right. I would assume it's the neurofeedback has clearly removed my nightmares. It clearly has allowed me to get rest, you know, like a normal person. I can sleep at night, and I just feel different, much different than I felt my whole adult life.
So you're not self-medicating to sleep. You're not self-medicating to get rid of the nightmares. So those components are not driving
correct.
You the way that they were. We don't have too much longer here, but I'd love you to tell listeners the story about when the day you went out on the boat.
I was working on a commercial lobster boat, and it was the kid's last day on the boat, and he'd worked on the boat for a few years, and he pulled out his backpack and pulled out some beers, and he went to hand me a beer, and I said, no, thank you, and I left that at that. But I didn't have any, no craving, no mouth-watering urge, no, my desire to drink is gone. I just, there's no, that urge that was, you know, that overwhelming urge to like, like my mouth would be watering. I would get that phenom of craving. It's mm-hmm. completely gone. It's been removed.
That is amazing. Well, believe it or not, that's all we have time for today, and I hope you now know what neurofeedback is and why it can be so powerful in helping addicts remain sober. And I want to thank our guests, Ray McGarty, Bill Scott, and Michael, for taking time out of their busy days to be on Break the Chains. You can learn more about our two expert guests on my Talk Zone show page under guest listings. Ray, would you also like to tell listeners how they can reach you?
Yes, McGartyAssociates.com. McGarty.
Okay. How about you, Bill?
Yeah, at brainpaint.com also. Or if you're looking for neurotherapists, you can Google search, find neurotherapists, and you can find a lot of providers we have in every major city as well.
Good, good. Now, if you have a question, a comment, or an idea for a show on Break the Chains, please email me at addictionradioshow@gmail.com or find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/breakthechains1. And there's also contact information for me, as I said, on my Talk Zone show page. So I look forward to being with you again next Thursday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, when our topic will be sober living. There are lots of options called by many different names, and some are like way better than others. So we plan to remove that shroud of mystery and get down to the real facts. For now, this is your host, Gwen Carden. Be safe, live smart, and most of all, take good care of yourself.